Well, it's not really special, but it is worth knowing about. Welcome to Friday, KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke with Ijeoma Oluo, editor-at-large at The Establishment and creator of the Badass Feminist Coloring Book. Welcome back.
Great to be here.
C.R. Douglas, political analyst for Q13 Fox. Hi, C.R.
Hello.
Jane Haig, former member of the King County Council and Bellevue City Council, a Republican. Jane, nice to be here. Nice to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me.
As I said, it's not special that your state legislature didn't do its job again. It is now in special session. Jane Haig, what is the most important thing the legislature has done or has not done?
Well, I really believe that they should be working on McCleary. It has been a mandate from the Supreme Court, and it is the biggest item in our state's constitution. It is an opportunity for us to address everybody that needs a hand up, not a hand out, and that is through education.
What does working on McCleary mean? Raising taxes to fund education fully, or what?
We need to be finding ways to meet the educational demand. I think that the legislature did a great job this session by allowing charter schools to occur. And that's another option that's in the toolbox for education. But certainly funding is a big issue, and we need to be creative, and we need to work together to make sure that we've got the funding options for McCleary.
So the legislature still has not said how it's going to pay for education, which is something that all the way up to the state Supreme Court, the court has said you're in dereliction of your duty. Okay, so that's something the legislature still hasn't done. Ijeoma, what's the most important thing out of the legislature this year?
I think one of the most telling things and maybe important lessons we've learned out of the legislature this year was watching that horrific bathroom law that people attempted to force through. I think it was a...
Explain, this is about transgender people using the bathroom, the gender they identify with.
Yes, a very thinly veiled attempt of transphobia to prevent people who whose, you know, genitals may not match their actual gender identity from using the bathrooms that they need to use. It's a very good reminder that we are not quite as progressive as we seem, and that Seattle is not Washington. And there's a bigger state, and there are people outside of the city who have rights that need to be protected. And we need to really be addressing the things that we are silent about, which is that if you leave the city center, there is a ton of transphobia, a ton of homophobia, a ton of racism, a lot of these issues. And I think we saw that in the reactionary politics of that proposed legislation. And I think that that was a very good lesson to those of us here in Seattle who think that we're safe in this liberal haven. And we're really not.
You know, outside of Seattle, where we talk about transgender issues far more than they do in a lot of parts of the state, you know, I can imagine people who just haven't been confronted with this issue who say there's a lot of things that are complicated, but this isn't one of them. There's boys and girls. But do you feel, Ijeoma, that is a matter of ignorance or worse? Because you don't know what you don't know until you know it.
You know, ignorance is... You need ignorance in order to be able to pass something like this. And there are people who will manipulate that ignorance in order to pass their hatred into law.
You think it's hatred?
I do think that the impetus behind the bill is. Whether or not everyone's supporting it is, I think that it is a manipulation of the ignorance of other people and the fear of other people by people who do genuinely have some real bigotry in their hearts to really use that and use a lot of scare tactics. The truth is that there are trans people outside of Seattle, and they are currently using the bathroom like people do. It's a bodily function. And to act like suddenly there's this hidden danger that has, you know, that's going to rear its ugly head is for a couple of things. It's a gross misunderstanding of how assault and abuse works in public spaces. And no, it isn't. We do not have sexual predators living in public bathrooms waiting for people to go into the wrong bathroom. And also, really, all it does is create safety issues for our trans population and forcing them to quote unquote pass in order to be able to safely use the bathroom, which people are still going to have to do. So I think that for a lot of people, they don't fully understand. They haven't taken the time to educate themselves because the information is out there. We are in the internet age. And there are people out there who have an agenda and will prey upon those little fears that ignorance can breed in the back of your mind and exploit it and make it bigger than that and send people into panic mode.
Before we go to CR, any disagreement on any of that, Jane?
Well, I would just say that much of the world uses the same bathrooms. I've traveled extensively in Asia and Europe, and it is not uncommon for men and women to be in the same line. So I'm not appalled by it. I think it's a matter of education and understanding how it works. And there are certainly options to have private bathrooms if you are concerned about privacy and coverage. So I think it's a matter of education.
C.R. Douglas, what's the we've been talking about a couple things the legislature didn't do, talking about, they didn't fund education. They didn't pass the so-called bathroom bill. What did the legislature do that matters?
Well, I think the most significant thing they did do was the hardball tactics between the Republican Senate and the governor over state agencies. They fired the Secretary of Transportation, first time that's ever happened in our state's history. They all but fired, they ousted basically the head of the Department of Corrections. And they're building a case against Inslee for kind of incompetent leadership. I mean, both those agencies have had a ton of problems. I mean, on the transportation side, you've had Bertha, you've had the 520 pontoon problems, 405 tolling kind of backfired. Department of Corrections, we all know about the early release and not having been on that quicker, early release of prisoners. And they went for it, the GOP Senate, in these ousters. And it's clear they're building a case for the fall election. I mean, for 30 years, Republicans have been trying to take back this governor's office, and they haven't been able to.
30 years.
30 years. Longest run of Democrat governors in the state, in the United
States. In America.
In America.
Yep.
They've done a lot of campaigns on tax and spending issues. They've done a lot of campaigns on jobs issues, on the economy issues. Nothing has worked. And it's clear they're going to go for a different tactic this year, which is management of state agencies, incompetence in the governor's office. That's already being talked about by the gubernatorial candidate. And they're setting him up, if you will, for a fall campaign that's going to be largely about that. It's
okay.
Very significant development.
We have some other topics to get to here on the Week in Review. Again, the state legislature is still working on a budget deal. Coming up on KOW's Week in Review, Washington troopers may now ticket you if you're in the left lane and not passing anybody. You could be going 60 miles an hour and get a ticket for not going faster. A state trooper told me so. Is that fair? We'll talk about this in about 10 minutes. Stay tuned. This is KUOW's Week in Review. Bill Radke, Ijeoma Oluo, C.R. Douglas, Jane Haig, thanks for tuning in. Seattle is still talking about a new sports arena in SoDo. You might call it a giveaway to corporate sports, or maybe the Seahawks' excitement reminded you that sports brings in fun and money. Ijeoma, you are a huge Sonics fan.
Yes, huge, huge, huge.
Tell us how big.
My mom, when I moved out of the house when I turned 18, my mom had to actually repaint the walls in the bedroom because I had stapled so many Seattle Times pictures of every player up there. I wanted to be Detlef Schrempf when I grew up.
You want to be an unselfish passer.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I really did. I felt there was something stoic about him.
Yes.
And Nate McMillan as well.
Nate McMillan.
That I just, you know, I really love, which is funny because there's, you know, nothing unselfish about me now. But I was a huge fan. I remember the earthquake going, the game is on, when it was all interrupted for that. So, yes, I was a huge fan.
So, therefore, bring them back, right? Pay what it takes for a new basketball arena in SoDo.
No.
Huh?
No. I did some deep soul searching, and I couldn't find any part of me that actually cares about a stadium right
now.
Nothing
in your soul cares anymore?
Nothing at all. That time is gone.
Why?
Gary Payton isn't coming back. Sean Kemp isn't coming back. It's been a long time, and I think we all need to, you know, it's like trying to fit into your old high school jeans. We just need to let it go. It's not going to happen. We have other things to worry about. The team is gone.
Okay, but one more pitch for you. What about yes, we're older and wiser now, but what about the younger, less wise people who want to have the same kind of fun that you did loving on Detlef Schrempf?
This is called good parenting, where we make very good decisions for our youth that they can't. They want a lot of things. They want ponies, and we say no. Mm. And they want this stadium that we don't need, and we say no.
Jane Haig, you were on the King County Council when the arena deal first came up. What should we do about a proposed basketball hockey arena?
Well, I would say that I have lived through three arena projects, and the Sonics Stadium was a big one. Nothing brings people out like sports, pets, and kids. And I think we have to take a look at the implications, the land use and economic implications of having a third arena in SoDo.
We have to take a look, but are you on the record yet? Have you figured it out?
I did vote for the stadium. I voted for the master plan between Seattle and King County, put options on for the environmental impact statement, and we're looking right now at the Key Arena. I think that that would continue to re-energize the Seattle Center. There are places outside Seattle that have land use opportunities and transportation opportunities that could take a stadium. But I think three in the SoDo, no more.
Okay, no more in SoDo. Should Seattle or King County spend a penny, or should this all be privately financed if it happens?
Privately financed.
Okay. C.R. Douglas, are the NBA and NHL hockey coming here?
Absolutely not. Certainly.
Absolutely not?
Well, no time soon. Certainly not within the time of the agreement that they had made with Chris Hansen. You know, this was struck in 2012, this memorandum of understanding that expires November of 2017. There is no chance he will get an NBA franchise between now and then. So this was in the news this week because the city council was debating, should we do a street vacation or not? But the fact that...
And by the way, just so you know, a street vacation is not as fun as it sounds. It's should the city give over a couple blocks of Occidental Avenue to Chris Hansen, the developer of this?
But it's all very moot because the MOU is gonna expire before Chris Hansen meets his requirement of getting a team. You know, a lot's changed since 2012, since the deal was struck. Chris Hansen's bloom is off. He got into some campaign violations down in Sacramento, actually, related to trying to buy that team. He got dinged and fined. Since that time, Steve Ballmer, who was part of this investment club, bolted.
The former Microsoft CEO.
Hometown hero. He was part of what was making this an attractive bid. He obviously left and went to buy the Clippers.
In Los Angeles.
And thirdly, and Jane referred to it in her remarks, there's a new study that shows that Key Arena, which was thought to be a place you couldn't ever do NBA, actually can. Maybe not the exact same building, but the footprint at Seattle Center is big enough. And you could do, based on this new report the city commissioned, an NBA facility there. And all things being equal, you talk to anyone in city government. I talked to the mayor live on TV just a month ago. He wants Key Arena. I mean, all things being equal, everyone would just assume have Key Arena. You get out of all the problems of a SoDo facility with congestion and port stuff, and you.
How is there not congestion when a Sonics game is at Key Arena?
You do, but Queen Anne has kind of evolved to accept it. They understand what it means to have basketball there. They understand what it means to have big games there. And Key Arena is an albatross. I mean, ever since the NBA left, it's been tough for the city to figure out what to do with that arena and that space. And so everyone, if you're going to get an NBA team in City Hall, basically would, if it could work, do it at Key Arena or that site.
Have we lost, in all our rationality and financial analysis, have we lost our sense of fun? The idioma described, you know, well, MAC-10. Yes, CR is literally raising his hand.
I don't think we have a lack. I don't think there's a fun deficit in Seattle. You know, since the NBA left, the Sounders have just kind of taken a lot of that space. You have the Seahawks, who have been to two Super Bowls with one victory since then. The Mariners will have their day again.
Day is that?
It may be next century, but they will have a day. Regression to the mean. So I don't think there's a sense that the city needs this.
We're having enough sports fun as it is.
Well, don't forget Storm.
Yes,
absolutely.
I don't. My daughter, who I think still thinks Sue Bird's name is actually Super, she will chant either one. But yeah, we have a lot of fun. So we're done. Am I hearing unanimity? Not a penny spent. CR, you're not going to put yourself on the record because you're a news analyst.
I think the appetite is pretty close to zero for really going to the bat for the stadium. I think what the city's doing and why this vacation vote was up, They are kind of going through the motions. There's sort of a good faith clause in this MOU that they kind of have to do some things to show that they're not just killing this deal. But okay. I think the appetite at City Hall is lukewarm at best.
Any last word from Igioma's inner child?
No.
Okay, we're done, says my guest. This is KOW's Week in Review. Again, the developer who owns that Soto land wants the city to have a street vacation. I like that name. Wants the city to vacate Occidental Avenue. It looks like the city council is going to take that up in about 2 weeks. KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke with Jane Haig, C.R. Douglas, and Igioma Oluo. This week, we raise this question. Have you ever been in slow freeway traffic? You move into the left lane to speed up, but the person ahead of you is going the same speed as the cars in the right lane. The left lane is a passing lane. By law, you can't be in that left lane unless you're passing. This week, the Washington State Patrol is cracking down. State Trooper Chris Webb says they're writing tickets.
What we're trying to do is keep the flow of traffic moving. And by having people just use that left lane to pass other cars and then proceed back over to the right, that helps out tremendously.
If it helps out tremendously, why don't we all do it? Why do people drive in the left without passing?
I think a lot of people aren't paying attention to what's around them. If they were to look up in their mirror and see that there's a line of cars behind them, you would think their common sense would tell them to move over to the right. So I think people either aren't paying attention to where they're at or what's behind them, or they're just so oblivious to the law that they just feel like they can stay in that lane and continue to move on. And I guess if people are backed up behind them, that's just the way it is.
That is State Trooper Chris Webb. KUOW listeners, most of you agreed with the trooper.
The idea that we're going to start ticketing people for parking out in the left lane and slowing miles of traffic makes me euphoric. It's been my pet peeve for many years.
Left lane campers on the freeway are more than just a pet peeve. It is gross negligence and reckless endangerment when people have to jump around lanes to maneuver around people camping in the left lane. If you want to go as slow as you want, do so, but do it in the right-hand lane.
It is one of the most frustrating things about living in Seattle is the traffic and the fact that people use every single lane to go the same speed as the person next to them. I think after this, if we could finally wrap our heads around the right of way at a stop sign, we would be so on key with the rest of the nation.
Well, one thing at a time. Meanwhile, though, a few of you don't want to pass on the left.
We're all going at the same speed. Why should somebody who wants to speed have the opportunity to pass everybody else?
Sounds like that listener would repeal our left lane passing law. Igioma, should we repeal that?
Yes.
Why?
It's not because it's not annoying. It's annoying to everyone. But the truth is, first of all, it's not going to solve our traffic problems. Every year we get more and more people on our roads than we are built to accommodate. This is putting a little band-aid on the situation for our drivers who are already frustrated because our infrastructure sucks. Second of all, we really do need to look at what these sort of piddly, punitive fines do to our more impoverished population. This is larger than just a ticket. When you get a ticket for something like this, that in most cases is not a public safety issue. For people who don't have that $100 to pay, that leads to a suspension, which can lead to arrest. It costs people their jobs. We don't live in a city that has robust public transportation for people to be able to make up that difference. And it's definitely something that judges across the country have been saying as well, that we need to be looking at how we traffic people and whether or not we're placing undue burden on our poor populations. And this is just one of those things that really does. And I think that we need to be more careful and more sensitive to the impact that these fines have on our populations who really don't have any other option if they get a ticket but to drive with that on their record until they get suspended.
That is an argument against the careless, insensitive use of traffic ticketing. Is there anything about this particular left lane enforcement that bothers you?
I think it bothers me, first off, because a couple of reasons. One, it slows traffic even more to see a police officer cross a bunch of lanes to pull over somebody for being in the left lane. That causes a huge backup, much more than that left lane camper does.
Well, the police would say that once they demonstrate what the law is, because most people don't even know, then we'll all straighten up and fly right.
I doubt it. I mean, we've had these signs up for years. Anyone who's been through driver's ed knows you're not supposed to camp in that lane. We could do better, I think, at talking about it. We could do better at, you know, PR campaigns to make sure that people understand what they're doing and reminders to be more aware. But I cannot see where this ends up being a net positive that's enough to justify the harm done to the people who receive these tickets.
In fact, you could be – well, CR, I want to hear your take on this.
I'm for the left lane law, and I'm actually for this crackdown, if you will, this emphasis patrol. I think it makes sense to spend a couple days doing this. We do this for driver, you know, DUI checkpoints occasionally. We do it for other things, speeding on certain corridors. I think it's a teaching moment, even though we've all been through driver's ed and stuff. I must say I didn't even really fully understand the left lane law until this happened, and our station's done a bunch of stories. Every media outlet's done all these stories. It's an occasion to talk about it, and I think there is a case to be made that that there's a traffic, you know, on balance, a traffic benefit to having this left lane law, and probably a safety benefit too. As one of the callers talked about, you know, some of the people going faster are merging, and that's a problem, or sort of jumping in and out of lanes. So I would do it. I don't know that I would, you know, a warning helps too.
It's true. You can educate without a $136 fine.
Yeah. But still, listen, you know, I think a $136 fine is gonna help stop, you know, some of the problem too.
And I want to remind listeners that the problem that the trooper explained is that traffic will flow better if that left lane is an option for moving ahead instead of holding that traffic back. Jane Haig, I did find it interesting. I talked to this trooper, and I pressed him on it. I said, so you could be going 60 miles an hour, which is what the sign says, and get a ticket for not speeding? And he said, yeah, if you're not going with the flow of traffic, if you're in the left lane, you should be exceeding the speed of the people in the right lane. You're still okay with that?
Yes, I think that that's something that the average driver isn't aware of, that you can go with the stream of traffic. And that may be more by 5 miles an hour or so, more. And I think it's our responsibility to have our troopers make the best use of our infrastructure. We aren't going to be getting more general purpose congestion free lanes. So we've got to make the best use of our current investment.
We did get a couple of calls from people saying, don't restrict use of the left lane, because you want everybody to be able to use every lane. That's going to free up traffic. But the trooper was saying, no, you'll free up traffic by using that lane to advance. All the fast people go on the left lane. We just got a tweet. And by the way, we're live tweeting the program at KUOW, and Nick wants to say, the left lane is like a bathroom. Go in, do your business, then get out. Good point.
I have actually a reverse pet peeve.
What's that?
Which is that I'm in the left lane, you know, a fair amount, and I'm going a little bit faster than, you know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to. Mm-hmm. I'm not camping. But I'm not going 70 or 80, and I've been in that left lane where people are just, you know, I'm sort of going like I should be, faster than the right lane, but these people are on my tail.
Okay,
you know?
So.
And then you move over, and they just zoom out at 75 or 80. I mean, this is.
But is it your job to enforce the speed limit?
Well, this is meant to be a pass lane, but not a fast lane, and I do think people are abusing going too fast, and I would actually support an emphasis patrol on some speeding in the so-called left lane.
Are you saying you have a right to be the pace car in the left lane saying, I'm speeding enough, I'm speeding the proper amount, and no one shall pass?
Yes, I am.
Wow! You take it up with the state trooper, pal.
You know, for me, one thing I would say, too, as a black woman on the road, I am not going to speed because I am more likely to get pulled over. And it has. Just last year, I was pulled over for going with the flow of traffic in the left lane. And I was the only car, group full of Black people pulled over out of everyone else. And I think for a lot of people, that's not an option to just take the trooper's word for it that, oh, no, it'll be fine if you're going with the flow of traffic. Because for a lot of us, you can be trying your best to obey every traffic law, we're going to get pulled over. So it's for me, it's a lose-lose. If I go with the flow of traffic, I'm going to get pulled over for driving while Black. If I am trying to be careful and responsible about that, I can now get pulled over for not speeding. So it seems like a luxury to me that I just simply don't have.
Well, there's a sad and alarming note to end on when it comes to the Washington State Patrol enforcing the law this week when it comes to the left lane, which is for passing. If you're in the left lane, pass, move safely into the right, or you might get a ticket that starts at $136. Coming back on KUOW's Week in Review. Republican Jane Hague is a former member of the King County Council and the Bellevue City Council. C.R. Douglas is news analyst for Q13 Fox, but neither of them brought you the badass feminist coloring book. That was Ijeoma Oluo, editor-at-large at The Establishment. And this is the Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. This week, Donald Trump, well, he's told us for months that America contains bad people, undocumented immigrants, Muslims, the media, political opponents, and protesters at his campaign rallies.
I love the old days. You know what they used to do to guys like that when they were in a place like this? They'd be carried out on a stretcher, folks.
Am I allowed to rip that whistle out of the mouth? I'd rip that whistle.
Well, if you see somebody getting ready to throw a tomato, knock the crap out of him, would you? Seriously.
He's walking out like big high fives, smiling, laughing, like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
No one has been seriously hurt at a Trump rally that we know of, but we did see one Trump fan sucker punch an African-American protester. We see the crowds sneering at demonstrators. My question is, where is this anger taking us? Are we headed toward more vilification and violence, Jane Hague? Or is that overblown?
Well, I would have to say that this the past 9 months have been really interesting to watch and to plug into not only the candidates that have emerged, but also the middle class anger out there. I think that that is a real reflection on perhaps political correctness, on the partisan antics in Washington about the basically the deadlock that we're in on so many issues where the public really wants answers and they want action. So I am very concerned that there is this backlash. I'm concerned about where it's going to take us. And I'm waiting for the adult in the room to stand up. And I'm waiting to see who that adult is going to be that emerges.
Who are you backing for president?
I am a Kasich supporter.
Mm-hmm. And are you...
I think that for the Republicans, he is the adult in the room. He doesn't have flash and dash like perhaps the two front runners have, but he has a proven record as an administrator, as a leader in a mixed state, and they have come to the polls in support of him most recently.
So I heard you say that this is interesting, that you're concerned. I'm trying to figure out whether we are or should be beyond interested and concerned, but truly, history is full of snowball effects and violence getting worse and begetting just more violence. Do you feel scared?
I am concerned that the politicians aren't realizing the depth of anger and the result of their inaction is having on the average voter. I'm not sure that they're aware of how concerned and frightened the middle class is, and people who are struggling from day to day to keep their jobs and wondering how they're going to support their families and keep a roof over their head. All we have to do is take a look at the freeways and see the amount of homeless encampments and people standing in lines begging for food to get by here in our own city, in our own region. And I think we have got to have leadership and policies that address the concern of the public sector.
And one more time before we go to Ijeoma, do you think that America can and will pull out of this angry time? I understand you've listed all the deprivation that is real and obviously is not going away right away, but Do you feel this is venting? Maybe the media is making a lot of a few spectacles, but America will pull out of this, or do you worry about a dissent? Which way do you feel we're headed?
I believe that we're going to end up with some collaboration, and it will be important to be part of the dialogue, be important to participate in our caucuses and our primaries and our town halls to make sure that we are demanding the kind of leadership that we deserve. And I do believe that America is still great and that we will pull together and we will end up with a leader that can take us forward into the future.
Ijeoma, what's your take? Where are we headed?
You know, I used to travel for a living for work, and I'd be sent all over the country. And one thing I would have to do that I don't think anyone else in this room had to do is every time I would travel to a new city, I would have to Google, how racist is this city? Because I would need to know if it was safe for me to be alone, if it was safe for me to be pulled over.
How would you get that from Google?
There are forums everywhere. People write if they've had problems. They'll say, don't go to this area. It's not safe. Don't stay in this hotel. It's not safe. Don't get caught speeding here. You may not come back. This is something that people of color across the country have to do on a regular basis. This is America. And that has been America. So I don't think there are many people of color who are shocked at all by the rhetoric of Trump. Angry racists finally have the candidate they've been waiting for. They called him into being. And this is not a question of whether or not we can come back for it. It's whether or not we ever left. Mm. There were no good old days for me that Trump talks about. It was illegal for me to have been born because of anti-miscegenation laws in the 60s, 70s, and all these days that people say were so wonderful and America's lost his way. If you are a woman or a person of color or a member of the LGBT population, there has never been good old days. So what we're seeing right now are people angry that they are somehow now subjected to some of the hardships that those of us have been dying from for decades. This is not shocking. All it is a voice to what we hear every day. If you want to see what America's like, follow me around on Twitter for a couple of hours and see the racist, sexist vitriol that's hurled at me and has been before Trump ever decided to jump on this bandwagon. This is what America looks like. And I know it's shocking for a lot of people to see who don't have to face it every day. But if you're a person of color, it's been your life.
So even if you don't believe in a myth of good old days, do you feel like this is a useful exposure and venting and let's get it out in the open? Or do you fear things getting worse?
I fear the bravado given to people to now be able to say openly what at least was inappropriate to say when there were people of color in the room. The sentiment is there and always has been there. I do feel that it is emboldening people in a way that they had not before. But it has always been here. And I do, it's funny, people were upset about the protests that, shut down Trump's rally last week. I was very glad to see that. I was glad to see people so angrily and righteously saying, no, this is not who we are. We do not agree with this. And this is not okay. This is violent rhetoric. And it is violent rhetoric. And we're seeing people being beaten in the streets while people are shouting Trump's name and, reaffirming his rhetoric. This does, just like any other hate speech, just like a Klan rally, leads to people that then get all high on hatred and go out and hurt people. This does the same thing.
Final word, C.R. Douglas.
Well, to your opening question, am I worried? Not hugely. I think these protests, riots, kind of scuffles at the Trump rallies are pretty isolated. I don't think they represent an insurrection that's in the offing. I think they are not happening anywhere else. It's not like Clinton rallies or Kasich rallies. I mean, I think they're pretty isolated to this particular candidate and this, particular forum, his rallies. America eventually does the right thing. And maybe I'm too much of an optimist, but I think
Ijeoma's saying you are too much of an optimist.
Probably. But that's why we have a panel. Ultimately, the frustration, and I think it's larger than just the protesters. I mean, there's some real anger here, but there's, violent anger, but the larger issue you're seeing on both sides, this frustration, this sort of middle class been left out, that is something that will eventually be addressed. It will have to be by whoever wins. It's too strong. It's too noticeable in this campaign. And like I said, America eventually gets it right. It's a lot of fits and starts, a lot of ups and downs. But I don't worry that the country's going to go off a cliff.
Washington State Republicans hold their presidential primary May 24th. Washington Democrats are caucusing for president in 8 days, Saturday, March 26th. If you can't go to your caucus, you can fill out a surrogate affidavit form online, but you've got to do it by today. Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are coming. Sanders holds a rally Sunday evening at Key Arena at 5 p.m. Clinton will be at a fundraiser in Medina Tuesday the 22nd. We don't know whether she's going to hold any public event. And we've been learning with you from the week's news with Jane Haig, C.R. Douglas, and Ijeoma Olua. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you
for joining us on KOW's Week in Review. Thank you for listening and contributing.